Life, Love, Faith, and Family is sponsored by the generosity of CityServe. Please go to cityserve.us to learn more about this amazing organization that works in cities across America and internationally. CityServe works through your local church to bless the underserved with their 10 initiatives. Go to cityserve.us to find out more and to bless them, won't you?
Welcome to Life, Love, Faith, and Family, a production of the American Association of Christian Counselors, the world's leading organization for Christian mental health care providers and advocates, with over 50,000 engaged members and students. I'm Jim Kress, and on behalf of our hosts, Dr. Tim Clinton and his son, Zach, thanks for making us a part of your day. We appreciate your time and support for what we do to help you grow better relationships and a deeper faith. Give us a call. We'd love to hear from you. Call our constituent care team at 800-526-8673 for information on AACC resources, courses, scholarships, and live events. And if you like what you hear on today's broadcast, tell a friend and join us on social media for more content. Just go to timclinton.com to find out more. Now, let's join our host, president of the AACC, licensed professional counselor and marriage and family therapist, Dr. Tim Clinton.
Hello, everyone, and welcome into Life, Love, Faith, and Family. I'm Dr. Tim Clinton, president of the American Association of Christian Counselors and co-host here at LLFF, along with my son, Zach. Thank you for joining us. Our topic today is, should Christians support Israel? Our special guest, Dr. Jeff Myers. Dr. Jeff Myers is president of Summit Ministries, a Colorado-based nonprofit organization that equips and supports the rising generation to embrace God's truth and to champion a biblical worldview. He's an educator, an entrepreneur. He has become one of America's most respected authorities on youth leadership and development. Focus on the Family founder, Dr. James Dobson, referred to him as a very gifted and inspirational leader. Evangelist Josh McDowell, one of our good friends, calls him a man who is 100% sold out to preparing the next generation to reflect on the character of Christ in the culture. Again, a new book out by him. It's called Should Christians Support Israel? Seeking a Biblical Worldview in an Impossible Situation. Couldn't have a more timely resource. Jeff, what a delight to have you. Thank you so much for joining us.
Tim, it's great to be with you.
Hey, I love your commitment to today's generations and raising up young lions, and Lord knows we need that. Jeff, what's been happening with Summit Ministries this summer?
We've had an amazing summer at Summit Ministries. So far, about 1,400 students have attended the 11-day programs that feature top Christian thought leaders, helping them grapple with tough questions in apologetics and theology, even economic, psychology, marriage, pro-life, all of those different things. And what we're finding, Tim, is that 95% of them leave the program saying they embrace a biblical worldview, as opposed to 1% of their peers, from 1% to 95%. And by the way, we keep studying them 1 year, 5 years, 10 years. So we have a rolling average. 85% stay strong in a biblical worldview. And this is in a culture when 70% of young adults are walking away from their faith by the time they reach their mid-20s. These students are going in the exact opposite direction. And I just think everybody who's listening right now is going to find that enormously encouraging.
Yeah, Jeff, and as you've looked in the eyes of these young men and women, I know from all walks of life, all over the country, are you encouraged? Do you really think that there's some backbone that's coming?
There is some backbone coming. There just aren't very many of them. But you know, if one of our theme passages is 1 Chronicles 12:32 that talks about the tribe of Issachar, 200 chiefs and all their kinsmen under the command, men who understood the times and knew what Israel ought to do. All the other tribes are listed by their troop strength. Issachar is listed by its number of leaders because they were ones who understood the times. So the 200 people out of the hundreds of thousands are the ones who made the difference. And that's still true, by the way. Erica Chenoweth from Harvard University found it doesn't take 51% of the population to move a population. It only takes 3.5%. So if we can stick together, help young adults gain courage and understand the truth from a biblical worldview, I think there's hope. But it's hard to say that because the times look so bleak.
They do. It's sobering to me. It's stunning, really. Speaking of Israel, Jeff, you've got a new book out on Should Christians Support Israel? Seeking a Biblical Worldview in an Impossible Situation. What a timely book, Jeff. As we look at what's happening over the pond, if you will, in the Middle East, people are they're staying up at night. They're concerned. I'm concerned about what's happening with Israel. And we were talking a lot about Hamas through the last year or so, Jeff, and it's really just shaken, taken the world by storm, if you will, in a lot of different ways. We're going to talk about that. But with Iran moving into the picture, Jeff, imminent issues, I mean, it's really concerning. People are worried about World War III and more.
Well, people are worried often because we don't understand what's going on. And I hate to just give one more reason to worry, but there's a generational divide. This issue is not as much of a Democrat-Republican divide as other things. It is a divide between older people and younger people. The younger generation has instinctively supported Hamas against Israel. And we need to understand that this is not, Tim, just about a strip of land in the Middle East. It's about everything, everywhere. The ultimate target here is Judeo-Christian civilization. And if you just go to Nablus or any place in the West Bank and talk to everyday Palestinians, you'll find out that's true. They will all say that Israel is the little Satan and America is the big Satan or the great Satan. Their ultimate target is to take down everything that has been built here in this country. And they're using the rising generation in America to do it, having trained them in their schools for decades now to think that America is more a force for evil than for good.
Jeff, I want to applaud you on your book, Should Christians Support Israel? I found it to be extremely helpful, insightful. I think people listening, if you have not read anything on this subject, you need to get a copy of this book. But Jeff, I want to jump straight into where this whole thing really exploded on all of us, and that was October 7th, 2023. This animosity toward Israel, it's so prevalent, strong, it's scary. What's happening over there, Jeff? But you take us on a journey and go back into ancient times, and you begin to unpack what we need to understand, that this has been going on for a long time, and this comes straight out of God's Word.
There's no question. And by the way, I'm making the book available as a gift. You can get it just by going to summit.org/Israel. You don't have to pay for it. If you want to chip in for shipping and handling, you can, but it's free. It's free because I'm so concerned to get the word out. In the book, I actually go all the way back to the story in the Old Testament of some of the things that happened in Gaza. We know that David fought Goliath, who was the leader of the army of Gaza. We know if you look back at some of the Samson, as an example, the story where he tore the gates off the city of Gaza. He went to sleep with a prostitute there, and he took those gates of that city and carried them to Hebron, which is super significant spiritually because that's where Abraham and Sarah are buried. And Abraham is the patriarch of the Jewish faith. And so here you have this reprobate patriarch taking the gates of Gaza and laying them at the tomb of the redeemed patriarch, Abraham, the one whose willingness to sacrifice his son Isaac precedes the coming Messiah. All of that has to do with Gaza. So this is central in the biblical narrative. But I wanted to talk about Abraham because to kind of lay the biblical foundation for a moment. God called Abraham through a covenant, and you talk about covenant. A lot of people don't understand what covenant is. It's not a contract. It is a life-binding agreement. And this life-binding agreement, God said, take these animals, separate the pieces, and we're going to walk through the middle. That's how you signed a covenant. You essentially said, if I break my side of this covenant, may what was done to these animals be done to me. Very serious. So the animals are all ready. Abraham's ready to walk through the middle with God. God puts him to sleep, and God alone walks through the pieces. So you have God making a covenant with himself on behalf of Abraham. Well, what is the covenant? That I will bless you and that all nations of the earth will be blessed through you. That's the beginning of the Jewish people. And that covenant was always with the land. And this is something that a lot of theologians skip over. We think, oh, everything is a spiritual metaphor. Now, there's actual groundedness to this. All the times you see the reference to the covenant in the Old Testament, it's with the people in the land, with the people in the land. So the land of Israel is somehow extra significant, not only spiritually, but physically, for the manifestation of God's plan. And that sort of sets the stage for where we are today.
Jeff, if you look at history, it doesn't even make sense that Israel is still even in existence, that they're even a nation. You hear what I'm saying? Because they have been, everybody has come against them to take them out. Hey, Jeff, one of the things we need to do, I think, is probably just understand some of the backdrop of the people involved here. Some connect this to the Philistines of old and more. Can you help us understand?
There is a relationship. It's hard to tell whether I don't think it's genetic, but it is absolutely rhetorical. So Philistine is, in Arabic, the word we use for Palestine is Philistine in Arabic. So they want to draw back that relationship. There doesn't seem to be any genetic relationship. In fact, I'll say there just isn't any genetic relationship between the ancient Philistines and the Palestinians of today. What happened was a rhetorical move. So you remember AD 70, Jerusalem was destroyed just as Jesus had predicted. A guy named Hadrian was a general, got to be emperor, and he took the name Israel away from the people and put the name Palestine in its place because he thought it would be of ultimate shame if he could rename Israel after its worst enemies. So that's how that region got the name Palestine. It was never a capital of any nation other than Israel as a nation state. It's never, in fact, it's just been an administrative district since AD 70 up until 1948. So that's a little bit of the history of it. Now, here's something odd, though, that most people don't think about. Until the 1940s, everybody who lived in Palestine was Palestinian. You could be a Palestinian Christian, Palestinian Muslim, Palestinian Jew. But it was the radical movement of Palestinians starting in the 1940s that said only Arabs now get to be called Palestinians because they wanted it to be an anti-Jewish movement. The Grand Mufti of Jerusalem was a key figure in that. He actually met with Adolf Hitler and said, we'll do the Middle East part of killing all of the Jews. You take care of the European part of it. So that was the stage in which the United Nations decided now was the time to reestablish the nation of Israel. They offered the Palestinians a state at the same time. The Palestinians refused. They refused it in 1948, 1967, 2000, 2008. Every time they've been offered their own nation, they refused. Because they do not want their own nation. They want Israel to cease to exist as a nation.
So as a point of clarification, Jeff, then a lot of people say the conflict over there is about the land, and they are battling over the land. But is this more of a battle related to ideology? When you say they want to wipe out Israel, we're talking then at a different level, right?
There's no question. The Palestinian movement, if there is, it's hard to tell that it's really even a movement because it's more tribal. There are a bunch of different tribes and they really hate each other. But the Gazans are ruled right now by this group called Hamas that everybody's been hearing about in the news. It is an apocalyptic rape and death cult. It has developed a charter. Their initial charter quoted directly from the Quran saying, all Jews must be slaughtered. Wherever you find them, slaughter them. So they don't just want Israel to cease to exist as a nation. They want the Jewish people to cease to exist as a people. And that is why Israelis are fighting back so hard against them. Now, there's so much going on in the region, it's hard to tell. Israel's fighting on at least six different fronts right now. But the main front that's in the news now is the one with Hezbollah. So Hezbollah is an army of Shiite Muslims. That doesn't mean a lot to people who haven't really thought much about Islam, but Shiite Muslims have an apocalyptic vision of their own. They imagine that someone will come along who is a direct descendant of Muhammad. Muhammad al-Mahdi will be his name. He's the 12th Imam, and he will turn the entire world into an Islamic caliphate and rule. So it'll basically be Iran over the entire world. That's their vision. The only thing they believe that's stopping that vision from taking place is the existence of the state of Israel. So Hezbollah not only has a geographical motivation, they have a strong theopolitical motivation to try to destroy Israel. And that's the part that Israel's having to fight right now.
So in the midst of all this, Jeff, then what gets confusing is a lot of the propaganda that starts cycling around all of what's happening over there. And there's questions about Israel and just war versus they trying to commit a genocide over there. And, Jeff, we saw in our own country on college campuses and university campuses, Jeff, where people were protesting against Israel. And you saw this, a lot of this anti-Semitism rise and this confusion about pro-Palestinian work and this mind battle here, if you will, took over social media. We saw that video show up on TikTok related to Osama bin Laden and more, and this sympathizing that was going on. Jeff, explain to us, because I think a lot of parents are getting confused in this spin. The younger generation seems to be highly influenced by this. What did you guys find?
I've done a lot of research on this. I obviously spent a lot of time with young adults. I've had more than 1,000 in Q&A sessions this summer, where we've talked about this specifically, and I fielded all their questions. By the way, somebody in the media said, I'm sorry I'm asking such tough questions. I said, listen, I've spent the entire summer with 1,000 16 to 22-year-olds. Trust me, none of your questions are that hard. But they ask hard questions. And here's what I've discovered along the way, Tim. The rising generation was always told by their parents, and rightly so, you should stand up against bullies. You do not bully people, you stand up against bullies. What they did not realize is that that teaching by the parents was being weaponized in the schools through a sort of neo-Marxist oppressor versus oppressed mindset. It said the world is really very simple. All you have to do is identify who the oppressor is, and then you can take whatever actions you need to against them, and it will be considered legitimate self-defense. That mindset comes from a Marxist worldview. For people who've studied it, it's called dialectical materialism. It's a Hegelian perspective. And all it means is this: clash is how history advances. So why the protests? Why the anger? Why the beatings? Why the anti-Semitic activity? Because the people who are involved believe they do not want peace. They do not want unity. They want clash. History does not advance through unity. That's what the Bible teaches. We want unity between races. We want unity between people who disagree with one another. We want love. No, no, no. This group says we want hate. We want clash. We want violence, because that's how history is going to advance toward sort of a communist utopia.
Jeff, in the midst of it, we heard chants like from the river to the sea, from the river to the sea. And I think a lot of kids got caught up in it and started chanting, et cetera, not really realizing what they were even chanting about. Jeff, who is Israel? Why care about them? You and I, we know the scriptures say that we are to pray for the peace of Jerusalem. We're to support and stand with Israel. We're taught that. But Jeff, help us understand, for those who are maybe a little confused about, is this just blind faith? What's happening here? Why do we do this?
Yes, and I go into quite a bit of detail in the book. It is a short book. You can read it in about 2 hours, 120 pages, and I'm just giving copies to everybody who's interested, especially to get extra copies to give to their church, their grandchildren, their children, summit.org/Israel. Israel today is a Jewish state. It is the only Jewish state in the world. Half of the Jews in the world live in Israel. And there are 57, by comparison, members of the Organization of Islamic States. There are 15 million Jews in the world. There are 120 Muslims for every Jew in the world, just to give you a sense of perspective. So you've got this tiny little nation that has found a way to become successful and bring blessing to the nations of the earth. Most of the technological innovations we take for granted came from Israel, or are based through headquarters of major corporations in Israel. Israel has been a key ally of the United States for decades now. It is through Israel that any peace agreements that have been made in the Middle East have come into being. And this has been the case for 75 years now. It's crazy to think that this little tiny sliver of land filled with Jewish people most of whom are hated by all of their neighbors, has actually been a source of peace, but that's how God has worked through history.
Jeff, we're fighting time. How then shall we live? Francis Schaeffer would often quote that statement. And Jeff, I think that's so applicable in this moment. We know we need to pray earnestly. And Jeff, how should we look at the nation of Israel? And what do Christian people, people of faith everywhere, need to do in this moment?
We need to be praying for the peace of Jerusalem, as you mentioned earlier, Psalm 122. That is the number one thing. Prayer is not just the thing that we do when we've run out of all other options. It's the base of everything else that we do. The second thing is we need to understand the issues that are at play. And that's why I wrote this book, because it's so confusing. We have to be able to sort out the issues, get beyond the propaganda. I think the third thing we can do, in addition to supporting policies that help Israel defend itself, I think we need to take a serious look at what's going on with Gen Z. Is it still possible to de-radicalize this generation? Because they're only 15% of the population, but they are 100% of the future. So we need to be serious about de-radicalizing Gen Z, and we need to be thoughtful. We need to think. And that's why I wrote the book. I want everybody to read it who's interested in the issue, yes, but I specifically want to get it into the hands of those in the rising generation. We have found that facts can change their minds. Facts really do work, but you have to get them into the hands of the right people and convince them that they need to go beyond watching TikTok videos for 2 hours and actually read a book for 2 hours.
Jeff, close us out with hope. Share with us the end of the story, if you will. Then in the midst of this storm, we know that in the last days, terrible times are going to come. And people are going to wax worse and worse. And boy, we're seeing a lot of evil unfold before our eyes. What do you wake up to? How do you encourage your own heart?
When I was there in the land, touring the war zone, spending time with the IDF, and it was pretty chaotic, artillery shells flying overhead. But I was able to have a number of really fascinating conversations. And the Israelis distinguish between optimism and hope. Optimism is a good feeling about something. Hope is a willingness to act. And I, for example, visited with one left-wing journalist who told me he's going back to his kibbutz. And I asked, why would you do that? I mean, you know that you're going to be under threat every single day. He said, it's my mission. I said, but you're not a believer. Why do you have a mission? How do you fight in a mission like that? And he said, we fight through our presence. And that, I think, may be the biggest takeaway for us. That in times like these, we move in rather than out. We press toward rather than away from. We engage rather than escape. Because if we don't do it, then we're signaling that we believe the enemy has won.
The book again, Should Christians Support Israel? Seeking a Biblical Worldview in an Impossible Situation. Dr. Jeff Myers, he's the president of Summit Ministries, massive ministry having an impact on today's generations. Jeff, you said again that you're offering this free of charge. People want to get a copy of it, where can they go?
If you just go to summit.org/Israel, you can see how to get your copy. And if you think it's a valuable resource, you can get additional copies there to give to your church. A lot of churches are preaching on this now and then handing the book out to the congregation, but especially to your children and to your grandchildren. They don't have to agree with everything. Just say, you know what? It's always healthy to have two perspectives on things. Take a look at this and let me know what you think. They might hate every word of it, but it is going to make a difference. It plants a seed.
Hey, Jeff, on behalf of our entire team here at Life, Love, Faith, and Family, my son, Zach, and we appreciate you and the great work that's being done. God gave you added strength, boldness, vision, clarity, and a voice for such a time as this. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, brother.
Hey, we come to you each week right here to bring you a word of hope and encouragement and to help strengthen your life, your love, your relationships with God and those closest to you. I hope you know that God loves you, that He's there for you, and that you can look to Him for help, hope, and encouragement in your everyday life. You've been listening to Life, Love, Faith, and Family with Dr. Tim Clinton and Zach Clinton. We love being a part of your life. For more information, go to timclinton.com. That's timclinton.com. Thank you for listening.
Thanks for listening to Life, Love, Faith, and Family. a production of the American Association of Christian Counselors, the world's leading organization for Christian mental health care providers and advocates, with over 50,000 engaged members and students. On behalf of our hosts, Dr. Tim Clinton and his son, Zach, God's richest blessings to you all. Join us again next time, and don't forget to go to timclinton.com to contact us or give us a call. You can call our constituent care team at 800-526-8673 for information on AACC resources, courses, scholarships, and live events. That's 800-526-8673. I'm Jim Kress. Thanks again for listening to Life, Love, Faith, and Family.
Life, Love, Faith, and Family is sponsored by the generosity of CityServe. Please go to cityserve.us to learn more about this amazing organization that works in cities across America and internationally. CityServe works through your local church to bless the underserved with their 10 initiatives. Go to cityserve.us to find out more and to bless them, won't you?